I am not an expert. I've never published a book or taught a class, but I love quilting, and I love talking about quilting. I make a lot of mistakes, but I like to think that sometimes I learn from them and get just a little bit better. If hearing about someone else's goofs and mess-ups makes you feel better about yours, then I've done my job. So join me now as we talk about quilting for the rest of us. Hello, I'm Sandy, and I'm a quilter, and welcome to episode 219, in which I just can't stop, and I'm recording this on Sunday, April 14th, 2024. I want to start by saying thank you to everyone who's been commenting. I'm still trying to get back in the habit of checking all the places. There seem to be more places that people can potentially leave comments than what there were several years ago back when I was doing this regularly. So if I've missed responding to you, I am really sorry. I try to always respond back if I can. You can reliably know I'm going to be checking my website, quiltingfortherestofus.com, and on Facebook page, or of course, if you email me. Less reliably in Podbean. Back when I was doing this, you know, ages ago, reliably, Podbean just didn't really have a good commenting section and nobody ever talked to me there. Now I am finding there are some of you that do actually leave comments over there. So I'm going to try to get better about checking all the places. I'm not going to actually go through and thank anybody this time because I did not prepare for that adequately, but I will start giving some shout outs in the future. I do want to say that someone did respond to my question about whether or not you wanted me to start doing, you know, media reviews and such, and there was interest, so I will include some of those in this episode, and if you don't like it, that comes last, so I'll let you know when I'm switching to that part of the podcast, and if you don't care, you can just turn it off. Otherwise, you know, as always, please do let me know what you think. So, from a quilting perspective, I thought no less than about an hour ago that I was going to be able to report that the wonky log cabin baby quilt top was done. And then I put it up on my design wall and looked at it. I took a picture of it, looked at the picture, and it was really that made it more obvious to me that there just seemed to be too much white space at the top. When you put a log cabin block on point so that the dark part is, you know, the colored logs are in the bottom, you end up with the top half, the pointy half being white. And because of the way the blocks are arranged, I ended up then with a whole lot of white just at the top. And so that is the title of this episode, I Just Can't Stop. So I looked at it for a little bit, kind of very quickly played with some ideas in my brain, and then remembered, well, wait a minute, I have the AccuQuilt alphabet die. I made a really cute banner with my niece's name on it a while, but not the same niece who's having this baby, a different niece I have that's only 4 years old. I used the pennant die and made her this really cute banner for her bedroom that has her name, you know, one letter on each one of the pennants. And it was just adorable. And so I thought, you know what would be really cute is if I put this baby's name in that white space. So I called my daughter up, who is my usual quilt consultant, and talked with her about the idea. She thought it was a good idea. And then we talked through colors and options and stuff. And we both thought it probably made the most sense to keep those letters red. And so I then, the size of the letters on this alphabet die from AccuQuilt means that if you cut like a 4.5-inch square, that'll fit over the letter. And so you can just do subcuts of 4.5-inch squares. Well, obviously, that's close enough to a 5-inch charm. So I went through my vast charm collection, plus a lot of 5-inch squares I've cut myself out of my own scraps. And her name, her first and middle name have 7 letters totally. So I found 7 different 5-inch charms, red prints, all red prints, So it's going to be scrappy, but the reds are all the same tone of red. And the prints are all fairly they're not tone on tone. They're definitely prints, but they're not going to be big and busy. I think it'll be really cute. I do also have, I think, enough fusible to be able to use. Hopefully, it's been in my drawer for a hot minute, so hopefully there's not an expiration date on that. So I'm going to work on that this week. What I need to decide is whether or not I'm going to bother actually appliquing the letters down. I mean, obviously they're going to be fused on. I don't know whether I'm going to feel like doing an applique, like a blanket squitch, a blanket stitch around each letter, or whether I'm just going to fuse them on there and then just let the quilting I'm going to do over the whole quilt keep them in place. There is a risk in doing that that parts of the letter could lift over time. So I don't know. Some of it'll depend on how long it takes me to get them on there in the first place, where I am in the week, how anxious I'm feeling to get this done, because her due date is somewhere in May. And right now I still have a hope of getting it to her before the baby's born. So there's that. I keep thinking of this, although I do have a name in it, name for this baby quilt in my head that I will use in whatever label I put on it. I have thought of this only as my big risk quilt because I am using so many different red fabrics in here, and it's all tone on tone white background. So, any of you who have ever tried to wash a quilt with red fabrics and a light or white background know the risk I'm taking. I believe I talked about that in an earlier episode, so I'm not going to go on at length about it now. Just keep your fingers crossed for me. I really, oh gosh, it's a risk. But hopefully it'll be okay. So that's where that is. I do want to point out, if you ever make a wonky log cabin, whether you make it using this particular ruler or not. Again, I made this with the Creative Grids wonky log cabin ruler. There's a couple things to keep in mind. The first being that when you're trying to put the blocks together, it's once again going to mess with your mind because you're going to keep thinking, wait, aren't those two seams supposed to match? Aren't they supposed to come in the same place? And no, they don't. The number of times when I was laying this out on my design wall that I kept shifting blocks back and forth, thinking I was supposed to be matching this seam when actually it didn't care about that seam and it goes with another, because everything is, of course, wonky. So be prepared to have your quilty brain messed with on a regular basis doing this process. The other thing that's actually a little more important is to keep in mind because you're cutting the logs, the log pieces, as more of a wedge, you've got an awful lot of bias in there. Now, it doesn't matter so much as you're sewing. I didn't really have problems with things getting out of whack. It wasn't until I was sewing the blocks together, although they're all trimmed to exactly the same size and all of that, because everything's just a little on the bias. When I got the whole quilt up on my design wall, you can see just a little bit of a ripple here and there. And again, I don't care because, as they say, I can quilt that out. It's not horrific. It's just be aware of that. I probably should have, if I really wanted to counterbalance that, I should have been much more exact in the way I sewed my borders, measuring my borders to exactly the same length of the side and making sure everything fit perfectly. I didn't. I just whack on strips and then cut off anything that's left over on the end. Because again, baby quilt. And in this case, again, the bias, the ruffle is not that bad. And I'm not hanging on a show, so I don't care if my quilts have a little bit of a ruffle on the side. They are meant to be used. And the more you wash something and the more you love it, it's the Velveteen Rabbit effect. I want my quilts to end up looking like crud. I want them to get used and abused and loved dearly and by that time, nobody's going to care whether there's a ripple in the side or not. So I don't stress myself on that too much. But if you are somebody that that's going to bother, just be aware of that and know that you're going to have to be a little bit extra careful about those bias edges. It's not quite as bad as triangles are, but it's definitely there a little bit. I think those are the only tips I really have about the wonky log cabin. I'm very pleased with the way it's turned out. I might post a picture on Instagram. I probably won't put one with this episode or on my blog quite yet because I want to get the letters done. Plus, I also have to be very careful. Actually, I may not post it on Instagram. I have two Instagram accounts. One's my quilty one and one's my family one. And unfortunately, there's a couple of people that found me, a couple of family that found me on my quilty one. And so I'm trying to be a little careful about how much I post about this, unfortunately, so that family doesn't see it. I don't know that they would know. I mean, I've posted some in progress pictures that I know they won't have any clue what it's for. But I think if I post the whole thing, and particularly if I post it with the name on it, they're going to know. So I want to keep that on the QT until I know they've gotten it. Sorry, folks. I know you're just chomping at the bit to see this quilt. We'll see. Like I said, I may find a way to post something. I don't think anybody reads my blog. I certainly know they don't listen to the podcast. So that I feel safe talking about it here. And, you know, this is our safe space. And I could probably post on my blog. But again, I'm just being a little careful about that at this point. The other quick update is that I have really struggled to find any long arm quilters that could get my Storm at Sea quilt in before the summer. And that was really stressing me out until I finally decided I am being so stupid because it's already two years overdue in the nicest calculation. It's like 4 years overdue in the more real calculation of when I thought I was going to have to get it done. So what's another few months? You know, so I am going to just arrange with somebody to, I'll get it to them, and whenever they can get to it, they can get to it, and I'm just going to stop sweating that. I just need to get it out of my quilting room. That does mean, however, I am going to have to face the backing, and I just don't want to. I know I've whined about that before, and I'm going to whine about it again. I don't have table space big enough anywhere in my house or floor space big enough anywhere in my house to deal with that much fabric all at once. I hate it. That's probably the biggest reason why I don't like doing big quilts, actually, now that I think about it, is dealing with the backing. So I'm going to have to, I do have backing fabric for the Storm at Sea quilt that I bought eons ago. Unfortunately, I don't remember if it's normal or if it's wide back, if it's 108 inch. If it's 108 inch, it still might not be wide enough. I still might have to do some seaming. I don't know. Part of me would be willing to just lop off part of the Storm at Sea just to make it fit so I wouldn't have to piece a stinking back that big. We'll see. That's a problem for another day. Okay. Quilty tip, or rather some more explorations, I guess I could talk about. I mentioned a little bit about quarter inch seam guides on my last episode. No, two episodes, I don't know. Sometime in the recent past. I talked about playing around with different quarter inch seam guides. I know I played around with different quarter inch foot presser feet. I have also been messing around now with seam guides. And by seam guides, I mean the things that you actually put on your, on the throat of your sewing machine that you can either eyeball or run your fabric against in order to keep your quarter inch seam. Now, when we left the story last time, I was using the adhesive sticky and the seam guide called, I don't remember. I'm sorry, I'll have to put it in the show notes. It was the one that you get a guide, and then you get these adhesive sticky things that you stick on that have that provide kind of a wall. I do know I talked about the fact that I thought I'd ordered the guide and never got it. I apparently must have never ordered it. I'm going to have to go back in because I never did get that. So all I had done was my own measurements, you know, with rulers and stuff, and had the sticky guide on there. And that sticky guide sat on there for a long time, even given the fact that I was changing bobbins. I had to keep peeling it back so I could get it because I have a bottom load or a top load bobbin on my Janome. So I'd have to peel back the sticky a little bit, change the bobbin, and then stick it back down. And it really, it worked. It didn't really lose any of its sticky. Unfortunately, when I was working on, I think it was when I was working on the inner border for my baby quilt, I suddenly had all these problems with breaking threads and all of this. So I had to really pull everything apart, do a good cleaning, get all the lint and everything out of there. And then put it all back down. And in that case, unfortunately, when I pulled the adhesive seam guide all the way off, it immediately picked up too much of that lint and too much dust and thread things and stuff. I couldn't get it to re-adhere. Now, I know I got another one in the package. Do you think I could find it anywhere? I have no idea where I put that other one. But given the state of my sewing room right now, it's also not a surprise. I really need a good non-sewing cleaning organizing day because things have kind of gotten all over the place in the midst of me getting these quilts done. You know, this time it's messy, but it's a good kind of messy because I've been doing stuff. It's not good messy when I haven't been in my sewing room so long that stuff just gets stacked on that table that has nothing to do with quilting. That's a sad messy. This is a happy messy. But anyway, I need to clean up because even happy messy is messy. Anyway, I'm sorry, I'm losing my train of thought. So I couldn't find the adhesive. So I then pulled out another seam guide that I had gotten. It must have been in a sew sampler box because I have been still getting sew sampler boxes every month. Even this whole time I haven't been sewing, I've been getting them because for a while there, if you got off their list, you couldn't get back in. I don't know if they're still that tight. And I usually, a lot of the stuff I use now is stuff I've gotten from various sew samplers. So I had gotten at one point, it's the Clover 6-in-1 Adhesive Seam Guide. And I believe it's a Nancy Zeman thing. And it's these two big pieces of neon green plastic that have adhesive on the bottom of them. And it must have come with a seam guide that I must have lost when I opened the package. Again, happy messy, but messy. So I had the two pieces of plastic there. So I just put one down. I measured, I figured my quarter inch, I put it down and I tried to use it. Kind of hate it. It's just too big. I found that I kept either my fingers were running into it or it was catching pins or it was very awkward for me to work around. I'd be interested to know, I'm going to put the link to it in my show notes. If any of you have used this and love it and have found the trick to using it, let me know. For me, I think it was just too much in the way. I just kept running into it with body parts and with pins and such. And I didn't feel like it was really helping me keep that close a quarter inch seam, partly because of all that. So I yanked that off, threw it in the trash, and then ended up with the tried and true Post-it notes. So I have Post-it notes all over the place. I am a Post-it note evangelist when it comes to work. I'm always, whenever I do group stuff, I always have something with Post-it notes. So I actually travel with Post-it notes, which, by the way, set off the scanners in the TSA scanners because it's just, I carry them in a quilted bag that I made at one point, which is sort of a rectangular, long rectangular box bag, perfect size for a bunch of Post-it notes. And when I put it in my suitcase, it goes through, and I guess it looks like a loaf of bread or something. It comes through as an organic material, and so they always have to pull it out and look at it, and then I always get weird looks about why are you traveling with a big bag full of post-it notes. So anyway, I just have them all over the place. So I just took one of the pads I have, pulled off a clump of them that was just high enough to provide a wedge, but was still comfortable enough for me to run my fingers over. And I actually found, other than the fact that I was using big, I mean, kind of regular size post-it notes, so they took up a lot of space on the right side of the needle, it was great because you can figure out just how high you want it, and you can just rip off a clump, measure, slap them down, really easy to use. And then what I was doing as my quarter inch seam, it wasn't catching pins, and I was actually able to sort of run my finger along the top of the post-it note wall on top of the fabric to just keep it going straight all the way to the needle. And I might stick with that. Because again, I've already got a lot of post-it notes. It's sort of like using fabric for my stash. I'll use post-it notes from my post-it note stash. That worked really well for me. So I think that might be my method of choice, at least for the next little while. Yeah, I don't know. Stay tuned. These are all things I am trying for you so that you can say, hey, I have some post-it notes. Maybe I can try to use them too. We'll see. Leave comments. Let us know what your favorite way of tracking your quarter inch seam is. If you have a particular tool or a technique or something, or if you are just a really accurate eyeballer, that would be a wonderful, wonderful gift to have. I'm not. I'm frankly extraordinarily proud of myself when I actually come out with a quarter inch seam. That's just a happy thing. For those of you who are new quilters, I've been at this for a while and I'm still happy when I actually get it right. So that does say this is probably the most important skill you can work on is your quarter inch seam. If you can get really good at your quarter inch seam, that will just save you so much grief in the future. Ask me how I know. All right, so that's all the quilty stuff this time. So those of you who are not interested in the lit reviews or the media reviews, you can say goodbye now. Okay, if you're still with me. So here's what I'm reading. I almost feel like if any of you have ever listened to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast, it's a great one, by the way. They always say, what's making me happy this week? And so that's what I kind of feel like I should consider this. What's making me happy in a non-quilty way right now? Reading-wise, I just finished the third book in the, I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, Daivabad trilogy. Daivabad trilogy by S.A. Chakraborty. I have read just about every book she's ever written. I love her stuff. I have been a fantasy reader pretty much my entire life. As soon as I first started reading, very quickly fell into the fantasy genre. The problem is, for those of us, well, actually, until fairly recently, most fantasy novels in the early years, and I would say probably up until the early 90s, somewhere in there maybe, but when it started changing, but even then I think it was a slow change, most of them were based on white European mythology, or they were set in sort of quasi-European medieval settings, had a lot to do with European mythology, and so forth. And I enjoyed that for a while, but after a while, I'm like, would you stop with the medieval villages? And I just got bored of it. And so I stopped reading fantasy when I hit probably my late 20s, which was, okay, I'll age myself. I was in my late 20s in the mid to late 90s. And then I just stepped away from fantasy for a long time, and that's kind of when I got into cozy mysteries. I started doing more of that. The only fantasy I kept reading, because you have to, is Terry Pratchett, the Discworld series. Those are just wonderful, wonderful satire. So I did keep reading Terry Pratchett through all of that. But other than that, I really wasn't reading fantasy at all. It wasn't until I joined the Book of the Month Club right as I graduated from my doctorate, because I was like, finally, I have time to read again. My treat to myself was joining the Book of the Month Club, which I love, by the way. I tried a few different books clubs. The basic one, Book of the Month Club, does an excellent job with debut authors, with women authors, and with authors of color and young adult literature from all of those categories. And that's when I first became kind of reintroduced to fantasy, but fantasy that doesn't come from the white European experience. And so I have read so much fantastic fantasy now, based in African folklore, based in Persian folklore, based in South American folklore, and now S.A. Chakraborty is Middle Eastern and Islamic folklore. And so for me, it's a breath of fresh air. I just absolutely love it. Plus, she is just excellent at writing characters. So the trilogy is City of Brass. I can't remember all three of them. The last one is Empire of Gold. That's the one I just finished. City of Brass, I think, is the first one, and I can't remember the middle one. They're all... they're not for the faint of heart, because all of them are very long. They're, you know, several hundred pages. But they don't read... They're a good read. So you don't really notice how long you're in a book. And particularly, I was reading them on my Kindle, so I had no idea, you know, how close to the end I was. I did find that I had to take a break between finishing the second book. I read the first and the second one back to back, and then I had to take a break for a couple of months before I started the third. But once I started the third, I was right back into it, plowed through it. They are so, so good. And like I said, they're based on Middle Eastern Islamic folklore. You basically follow three main characters, although the third character doesn't really... You don't really understand it's going to become one of the main characters until partway through the second book. The first two characters you're with from the very beginning. What I love about them is the main character, the one around whom everything kind of revolves, is a young woman. And then she ends up connected with I believe he's a Deva. I'm sorry, I'm probably getting my terminology wrong. You would think I would have read all three of these and I would know them. But he's kind of a unique character because he started out as one thing, but then he got captured and magically made captive to a variety of masters over time. And so he became this sort of unique type of character. And you follow the two of them through the first book, and then you start meeting this world of characters. Excuse me. And then, so you meet the two of them, and they feel like this kind of static, you know, it's a great relationship between the two of them, and you're following them through this journey together. But they don't change that much until the second half of the first novel. And then you start getting hints of things to come. And then the second novel kind of twists everything, and you end up in a very different place. And then the third novel is kind of resorting all of that back out. And the character growth through those three novels is just really good. So I, you know, if you're into fantasy, I highly recommend that trilogy. Just know you're in it for a long haul. But they're really, really good. There is a fourth book that she has that's related to the trilogy that I just downloaded. It's The River of Silver. And it's basically, it's River of Silver, Tales from the Day of a Bad Trilogy, and it's short stories based on that same set of characters in the same world. Apparently, it's sort of some that are prequel stories, you know, kind of the backstories of some of the characters. Some are within that world, but dealing, kind of focusing more on other characters that you don't spend as much time with. And then I think some might come after that world. I'm not quite sure exactly how it is, but I thought, okay, that might be fun to read through that. So I'll, you know, that's to come. I'll be reading that. I never ever just read one book at a time. So the physical novel, I always have something going on my Kindle, and then I have a physical novel. And my physical novel that I'm in the middle of right now is The Women by Kristen Hannah. I'm about a little better than a third of the way through, probably very close to half. I had a great morning reading this morning. I am finding the same thing with this that every other Kristen Hannah book I have read, and I've read a couple of hers now. She does a fantastic job with setting, with feeling like she really brings you to this place and time. And I love that about her books, and that's what keeps bringing me back to her books. I just have to say, I struggle to like the main characters and to find them believable as human beings. They often come off to me a little bit of a caricature, but the setting she does fantastic at. So I'm gonna keep going. This has gotten rave reviews, and you know, right now I'm at a solid 3.5 out of 5 stars. We'll see if that edges up or edges down. That's kind of where I'm at. If any of you are reading, no spoilers. Don't give me any spoilers, but I would be interested to, you know, what was your opinion, if you can do it with no spoilers. The other thing I'm reading, now that I finished the Dave About trilogy, I'm back to another series that I've been reading right along in my cozy mystery world, which is, I read fantasy, I read cozy mystery, and then I read historical fiction. Those are kind of my three big categories. I have been reading David Gatward's DCI Harry Grimm series. I think I'm up to number 12 or 13, somewhere in there. And I think he's got 18 out right now. They're, you know, some basically enjoyable, good, cozy mysteries. I don't like them quite as well as I like Ann Cleaves. I love Ann Cleaves. I'll read anything she ever writes. David Gatward, I like his characters. The setting is fun. But, you know, it's just, it's occasionally a little bit clunky. Sometimes the dialogue feels a little awkward. And some books are better than others, which is always going to be the case in these, in series like this, where somebody is so prolific, because this isn't, these are coming out at least once a year. It feels like maybe even faster than that. But they're enjoyable. And Harry Grimm is kind of a unique character to be following. He's verging on the edge of anti-hero, but not really. He's quite likable, but he's not kind of your normal likable person. So I do recommend those if you enjoy cozy mysteries. They're fun. They're a good read. So that's what I'm reading. I do want to say, I won't always do TV because TV is much more, it's funny that I think of TV as a more difficult thing to recommend than I do books. Maybe I'm just not as used to doing it. If you have not yet watched Renegade Nell on the Disney Channel, you need to watch it. My husband and my daughter and I, my daughter's 30, we plowed through all of the episodes in probably 3 weeks. We tried not to just, you know, binge watch all of them. It is just so cute. It's a fun, good, clean fun. It's just fun. So I highly recommend Renegade Nell on Disney. Because it's on the Disney Channel, as you can guess, it's good for kids too. I don't know your kids. There are some pretty scary parts for young kids. I wouldn't say it's for young kids, but maybe 10 and over. I don't know. I think when my kids were 10, yeah, I probably would have let them watch it. But you know your kids, so do your own reading up on that. But it's fun. My husband and I enjoyed it thoroughly. My 30-year-old daughter enjoyed it thoroughly. So, yes, I recommend Renegade Nell on Disney Plus. So that's it for this episode. I'm doing a quick time check. Again, I'm coming in at about half an hour lately. That's not bad. You know where you can get me. You can email me at sandyquilts@gmail.com, Sandy with a Y, Quilts with a Z. You can follow me on Instagram and Pinterest. You can friend me on Goodreads. I'm not Sandy Quilts there. Maybe I am. I don't remember. You can like us on Facebook, Quilting for the Rest of Us, and you can join the Quilting for the Rest of Us Kiva team. And you can find all of that and my blog at www.quiltingfortherestofus.com. Until next time, go get your quilty on.
Quilting for the Rest of Us is dedicated to Shirley. Love you, Mom.